Welcome to the China Smart State podcast, produced by the Light in Asia Center in association with the DigiChina project at Stanford University. This podcast is all about the digital transformation of China in all its complexity and how it affects the politics, economy, and society of this rapidly emerging cyberpower. I'm Roger Kramers, and my co-host today is Straton Papagianeas, who's writing a PhD at Leiden University on the digitization of China's judicial system. It's an absolute pleasure to talk today to a wonderful scholar and indeed a long friend of mine, Rachel Stern. Rachel is a professor of law and political science at UC Berkeley, where she holds the Pamela Fong Family Chair in China Studies. She has a long track record in meticulous and sympathetic study of the Chinese judicial system, particularly through the eyes of the professionals working in it. But in recent years, she's also teamed up with Benjamin Liebman, Molly Roberts, and Alice Wang to study the increasing use of big data and artificial intelligence in Chinese courts. Most recently, this work has resulted in a new paper titled Automating Fairness, Artificial Intelligence in the Chinese Courts. And it's this subject that we will be addressing today. So, Rachel, we're talking about smart courts here, AI-enabled, big data-based courts. What is this all about?
Well, hi. Thank you so much for having me on to the podcast. Smart courts is kind of an umbrella term for a whole bunch of stuff. So I'll just lay out four different things which conceivably fall under the banner of small courts, and then we'll try to be specific about what we're talking about. The first thing is there's a digitization of the litigation process, like using computers instead of paper. Building websites and mobile apps to file cases, submit and receive court documents, and receive updates about ongoing litigation. That's a big piece of it. The kind of sexiest piece of it is the move towards computer-assisted judging, trying to design computer systems for judges that analyze similar cases with a similar fact pattern and give the judge a sense of what a similar sentence has been in the past. And the hope there is to reduce judges' workloads by drafting parts of opinions or maybe even giving them some guidance in how to decide easy cases. Then two more can also be used to monitor judges to see how fast judges are deciding cases and to make sure the workload between judges is even. So in the service of court administration and judicial efficiency. And then there's also a part of this where the courts are trying to use their own data to predict trends in economic and social development, to figure out what's going on, what kind of conflicts are bubbling up in the system, and I think ideally to get ahead of them and to help the state get ahead of them in solving them.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you for being here. Thank you for this wonderful first explanation of what these smart courts are. So, as you said, they are umbrella terms. Is it possible to develop a definition based on the characteristics that you just gave of smart courts?
That's interesting. I don't think there is a definition. Could we develop one? Maybe. I mean, smart courts are a capacious political slogan. So I think the vagueness is part of the point. It's associated with Zhou Qiang, who's been the president of the court system in China going back to, I think, 2014, around then. And so I think that for him, and as smart courts have come up in Chinese court documents, I think the flexibility of that term has been part of the appeal. The fact that anything that is sort of vaguely technological could fit under this umbrella is appealing to people inside the courts. For us as researchers, sure, absolutely, we could develop a definition. We could talk about like four dimensions of smart courts along the lines that I just suggested or something like that.
Interesting. It's indeed like that. When you read about these developments in Chinese news articles that they call a certain system a smart, part of the smart courts, but it's a completely different system than somewhere else. Do you think then that there's a different degrees of smartness?
Sure. I've thought about this too. Like, can we think about it like a spectrum? I think it's really clear that the digitization is the low end of the spectrum. That's the most basic thing. And there's the Chinese courts themselves have said that that kind of most basic step is largely behind them. I think these are official statistics, so we should take them with a grain of salt. But the official statistics are that 97% of courts now support online case filing, and 63% of courts have voice recognition and transcription during hearings. So that's kind of the lower end. I don't know how to array the other things. Like, what would the most ambitious be? All of these seem kind of ambitious to me. Using data to predict trends, monitoring judges, computer-assisted judging. So that's all high end, but I'm a little hard pressed to say which is the smartest of those.
And it does seem to sort of fit within this idea that we have of techno-optimism in the Chinese state, right? Algorithms solve problems. But what you're describing, you know, indeed as a spectrum, it is one thing to say you can submit your court filings through email rather than have them sort of signed and deposited during office hours at a particular time, or particularly during a pandemic, you can participate in a court hearing electronically rather than have to rock up to a building. It's another thing to indeed take these steps which are about decision-making, right? When you have pre-written judicial decisions, or when you're trying to predict trends or monitor judges, how does that impact judicial decision-making? And what does that tell us about the idea of justice that these reforms are then trying to pursue?
I agree. That's the most interesting question, is that when you have these computer programs, how does it matter for judges on the ground? Maybe I can just give an example. So the example that I like to give is, you can imagine if you have a judge sitting in a low-level, basic-level Chinese court, imagine a drunk driving case. So the way the computer software would work is there'd be a pull-down menu, and I know this because I've seen demos, and the judge would be able to select the level of blood alcohol and then the amount of damages, how much money was implicated in property damages, were there deaths caused? And then based on that fact pattern, what the software would do would be to recommend similar decisions with a similar fact pattern that have been previously decided. And then it might also give an indication of what an average sentence is in terms of a fine, in terms of jail time for a case with a similar fact pattern in the past. So if you're a judge sitting in a Chinese court, assuming you open the software on your desktop, what do you do with this information? And I think there's pretty strong evidence from research at the intersection of law and psychology that when a suggestion is made about what an average sentence is, that the way the human brain works is it serves as an anchoring point. I think it's not a point about Chinese judges in particular. I think it's a point about humans, that humans are likely to go along with whatever they were just told the average is. I think there's some things about the Chinese court system in particular that make us think that judges would be even more likely to go along with whatever the software recommends. The fact that there are so many cases going through the system, that they're potentially under time pressure to decide cases, and also potentially want to sidestep responsibility for their decisions. So the ability to blame the computer system if anything goes wrong, or to stick within the mean and not stick out, are potentially appealing features of this for Chinese judges. But the truth is, and I'll just be really honest here, I don't think we know. I think that might be the biggest open research question to come out of this whole project, is how are judges using this software? We know the software has been procured in many places around China. We know it's been rolled out. But how judges are using it and how it's changing their judging is a big, big open empirical research question.
I think the whole point of the PhD that I'm doing right now was to try and answer this research question. But unfortunately, circumstances have decided otherwise, of course. But let's put that to the side for a moment about the reaction of the judges, because I would like to go deeper into that. But maybe it's interesting to first ask or discuss why courts are so enthusiastic and have so enthusiastically embraced this technology as a vehicle of reform.
That's a good question. So there's a number of ways in which this kind of software helps Chinese courts solve problems from their own internal perspective. Problems both that rank and file Chinese judges have every day, and also that higher court judges who are responsible for court administration have. So for the judges on the ground, the way it's being sold to them is that it's going to help with the problem of overwork and too many cases. So we've seen rising caseloads in the Chinese judicial decisions, Chinese judicial system in recent years, without a corresponding increase in the number of judges. So the idea of that this could help judges decide cases faster is super appealing. It may also allow judges to sidestep responsibilities for their decisions. That could also be appealing to a rank and file judge. And then from the perspective of people kind of a level up who are involved in court administration, the idea of having real-time information about how fast judges are deciding cases is tremendously appealing. That the idea of a dashboard where you can see all the judges in a particular court and how fast they're working, what their workload is, this is would be considered a huge step in improving judicial efficiency and just monitoring your people. And then I think for the court system just as a whole, this is an opportunity to lead both inside China and globally. I mean, certainly sitting in the U.S., this whole idea of computer-assisted judging feels super futuristic. I mean, when I present this material in the U.S., people are like, whoa, they're doing that? That's amazing. I mean, here in California, we can't even get the digitization of the litigation process down. I mean, we're still on that first step, and it's not even a priority. So I think that that idea that Chinese courts, which for so many years have been dogged by a reputation of being weak players within China, I think the idea that here's an area where they can be out ahead of other parts of the Chinese state and out ahead of the world, I mean, I think that has tremendous emotional appeal.
And I also think with regard to the court system, the example that you give is a really interesting one. Because very often when we talk about the Chinese court system, you know, a drunk driving or a speeding ticket or, you know, an alimony calculation in a divorce case, that's not the first thing that we think about. We tend to think about criminal justice. We tend to think about high profile cases involving disgraced senior officials or involving high profile dissidents. One of the interesting points here is that, you know, this underlines the extent to which the Chinese court system is also about, or mostly about, if you look at the numbers instead of the profile, about bread and butter cases, which may well be replicable. What does it do to the authority of a court when you don't get the feeling that you get a tailor-made decision, but that it's, you know, coming out of an automaton? Can we say something about sort of, you know, what is the trust or the authority of technological solutions in China instead of political solutions, for instance, or other, you know, the weaknesses that you identified in the reputation of the court system until now?
In terms of the logic of the Chinese court system, I think this fits pretty squarely with a longstanding concern of what's sometimes called deciding like cases alike, which just means making sure that you get the same result, whether you're in Beijing or out in rural Gansu or wherever. So there's a concern with the uniformity of justice as an element of fairness that is served well by computer-assisted judging. That's part of it. I mean, whenever we start to talk about legal uniformity, I'm trained as a political scientist. So for me, I hear centralization of power. Like for me, those two ideas are really closely intertwined. Legal systems that are really pushing towards legal uniformity tend to also be political systems that are pushing towards centralization of power, of making sure that power is centralized in the capital and at the top of the state. So in this way, this push towards legal uniformity in the court system is very much in keeping with the centralization of power that we've seen under Xi Jinping. And those two are really moving in tandem with one another, this political trend and this legal trend.
So this could also explain the enthusiasm and the ease at which and the speed at which this technology gets adopted in the Chinese judiciary, because it fits perfectly in the current reform drives or the reform initiatives under Xi Jinping. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about these broader reforms that have been happening within the judiciary.
Sure. I'm wondering which ones you have in mind.
I was wondering the one about the judicial responsibility and accountability of reform. that has granted more autonomy to judges, to rank and file judges in deciding cases, but has also made them responsible for life. And recent publications have come out about the impact on the judicial on the discretion of judges in decision making, in the extent to which interference still happens with adjudication.
So if we had had this conversation, like I think even just a couple months ago, I would have said that the trend during Xi Jinping's time in power is that legal reforms are pushing toward legal uniformity and toward taking away discretion from judges. I would have said that the pendulum is swinging in that direction. Recently, I think the reality, I've come to think that the reality is a little more nuanced, that what we're seeing is deep, deep ambivalence within the political system about whether how much discretion judges should be given to decide cases. Let me just put this in a larger context and put two other data points on the table. So January 2021, this is just a couple months ago. On the one hand, China releases a massive new civil code. It's so long, over 1,200 articles. Whenever a country releases a huge new civil code, that's an effort to push towards legal uniformity and to give judges really, really, really concrete instructions about how they should handle a wide variety of specific case patterns. But yet, on the other hand, that same month, the SPC, that's the Supreme People's Court, which is the highest court in China, they issue a document encouraging judges to draw on core socialist values in decision making. So encouraging them to speak the language of morality and law instead of law, especially in cases of great public concern. And so that's totally pushing in the opposite direction and encouraging judges to bring values into the law, and I think to ensure that there's some flexibility in the system, and encouraging judges to consider non-legal norms. So I think this is a system that this is a central tension. This is a system that is at the same time, and it's of course different actors within the system, but there's appeal in multiple directions. There's an appeal to having robo judging because of the fairness and efficiency, but there's also an appeal to having judges who can draw on non-legal values to create flexible, bespoke solutions in cases that are high profile and have a high risk of turning into protest. So I think that tension is really, really central to the system right now.
To what extent is this also a function of, because in my own work, I'm seeing a lot of the ambivalence in this on, you know, the techno-optimism that you clearly see in Chinese governance more broadly, and the great ambitions there, governing countries through algorithms. But at the same time, a certain hesitancy against too much AI, particularly when machine learning is involved and the algorithms start changing themselves, because in the end, one of the things that we've always said about the Chinese Communist Party at all of its levels is that it's an organization that likes to be in control, and that's possibly putting it gently. And so there is this tension between that techno-optimism, which really believes that problems can be solved through the application of technology, and this notion that the party wants to be in charge. Now, is this something that you see politicizing these patterns in the judiciary, or are we mostly talking about things, you know, the daily life of most judges isn't actually that capital P political?
That's a really nice point. I like that a lot. One of the places that we see this, or the point you're making intersects with our research and the paper that we wrote, is the reality that to implement these kinds of software solutions, you need really tight coordination with tech companies. Like the Chinese judiciary can't do it by themselves. They just don't have the tech expertise in-house. No legal system would. I mean, American judges wouldn't have the right set of skills either. But what that means practically is that they need to create any of the tools that we were talking about, whether it's the digitization of the litigation process or the computer-assisted judging. They're partnering with tech companies, and that really difficult task of writing the algorithms is, in a best-case scenario, being done by a team of people with legal knowledge and people with technical knowledge. But I think that there is some unease within the judiciary about outsourcing something that's so fundamental to a team of coders who may or may not understand the law. And I think that that tension is kind of baked into the system as well. On the one hand, all the possible advantages of technology, but then the reality when you're sitting down and you're doing a project in whatever city is that the Chinese courts are partnering with a tech company that's doing making a lot of the key decisions in terms that the judges may or may not be able to understand.
Something I would like to pick up on is about the handling of tensions. And as we all know, that the Chinese political system thrives on resolving contradictions. One thing that I noticed in an authoritative opinion of the Supreme People's Court on building smart courts is that they are engaging smart courts and technology to resolve the contradiction between procedural and substantive justice. And for me, this tells me that they want to use this technology to basically reduce the discretionary space of judges, while at the same time maintaining this space of ambiguity to allow them to intervene in politically or socially sensitive cases. Do you think that the technology is the right way to approach this this kind of balance that they're trying to keep between these two diverging needs of the judicial system?
I think you're pushing towards asking a normative question about where the proper balance is between legal uniformity and judicial discretion. So how much power should we give judges to make the decisions versus how much do we want to rein them in? I don't know if you're going to be happy with this, and I'm happy to hear what you think too, but I'm going to say that that's a choice that every legal and political system faces and a choice that they have to make for themselves. I can tell you what kind of system I want to live in, but I'm not sure that's all that relevant to the Chinese discussion. We're having the same kinds of conversations in the United States as well. As I've taught about this for a long time now, and it's been interesting to see as new generations of students have come through, the appeal of robo-judging in America has gone way up. My students think that we have way too much American judges currently have way too much discretion, and they're interested in all kinds of tools to rein in that discretion. And I think, again, in our context, that comes out of a rising recognition of the ways in which bias, both explicit and implicit, can guide American judges to create particularly a criminal justice system that is racist. So we're looking for answers here because of this very particular moment that we're in historically, and also a rise of social science research that's documented judicial bias really convincingly. So here I think our pendulum is swinging toward more interest in automated tools that are seen as having greater legitimacy if they can overcome the significant barrier of just baking that bias into the algorithm, which of course is a huge and significant problem. So I think this is really a political question that first of all is changing over time and then is going to play out in different legal and political systems in different ways depending on what the most salient issues are. In the Chinese context, one more piece that we haven't put on the table yet is long-term concern about corruption in the Chinese judiciary. So computer-assisted judging and also the monitoring of judges, I think, is seen both by court administrators and to some extent by the broader public as a way to address judicial corruption. And that's an important point as well in the Chinese legal and political context.
My interest was indeed in how the Chinese see it and from the Chinese political perspective, where they effectively see supervision over the judiciary or as they say it, trial supervision and management as a key pathway to effective governance. And in that sense, like you said, the the technologies that are there to monitor and record every procedural step and monitor the progress of judges in cases is obviously very fits right into their worldview of how courts are supposed to function as agents of the state almost.
I think Stratton is bringing up a really interesting point. And that is, it is one thing how we think about this, but one thing that I tell people very often is that obviously China doesn't owe it to us to conform to our intellectual expectations or predilections. Could you give a little bit of an idea of what are the outlines of that debate, the parameters of that debate within China itself? Because clearly, the concern about racial bias in the judicial system, it's something that very much alive in the Western world after Black Lives Matter and so on and so forth. But I'm not sure that that's at the moment a very big thing by the movers and shakers in China who are building or assessing or working in or studying this system. What is it that they are most concerned about?
Absolutely. That is always the question. So how is this question framed within the Chinese context? Consistency, deciding like cases alike, is a big theme and a big component of what counts as fair. Efficiency is a big issue. It's a big theme in how the Chinese judiciary talks about itself and its goals. It is particularly important against the backdrop of rising caseloads. And I'll just mention that it's different in different places in China. It's particularly an issue, this rising caseloads and efficiency, of course, in China's big cities, Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, Shenzhen, all along that eastern seaboard. So the court system is kind of concerned with how to allocate judicial resources to make sure that there's fair, efficient decision making. One of the slogans that's been associated with Xi Jinping is to help people feel fairness and justice in every case. And I've found that to be a really interesting kind of phrasing, because there's an emotional component to it, to let people feel like justice has been done, so to let people go away satisfied. So I think that gets to where some of your questions have been coming from as well, which is, I think, again, an open empirical question. Does having computer-assisted judicial decision-making add to the legitimacy of the Chinese courts? Are people better able to accept the result if they know that it's come from a computer? I think that that's not clear yet. I think that that's one of these things that we'll be figuring out in this next generation of research. I think it's an interesting comparative question too, both to look comparatively to start with and also to track changes in this over time. One of the first pieces I've seen on it, I'll just mention a paper by Ben Chen and Li Zhiyu. They did an online survey in which 90% of the Chinese respondents expressed the belief that publicizing judicial decisions will increase public confidence in the justice system. So it's not exactly what we're talking about. I framed the question as one about robo-judging, and the data is one about judicial transparency. But I think that's a very initial point to try to figure this out. I think the Chinese court system is kind of placing a bet in a way that publicizing judicial decisions and then also integrating these technological tools will increase public faith in the courts and judicial legitimacy.
Do you think that's because if we're looking at a broader perspective, governance perspective, where they are also trying to using artificial intelligence technology in other aspects of governance, do you think that this is kind of part of the belief in a metric fixated approach to how the world is supposed to function and how governance is supposed to be, that is set in numbers and metrics rather than in a personalized experience?
Yeah, I think it's part of a broader embrace of indicators of all kinds. I think the Chinese state has embraced indicators, love them across the board, love them in every single way. And so I think that this is part of a broader push towards, in an earlier draft of the paper, we called it data-driven governance. And of course, to have data-driven governance, the reality is that data has to be distilled into something that people, ordinary people, can understand. And a big part of that is turning data into indicators.
for anyone who's been looking at China in any amount of depth for a while, that isn't really surprising. Chinese senior officials have always loved numbers. You know, listen to any political speech, even from the 1950s. It's all about how many tons of grain or how many tons of coal were made and all of that. And so we now seem to be coming in an age where we have the computational power and the data collection ability to do that to everything and everyone rather than just heavy industry production figures. But if we think a little bit forward, and you know, it wouldn't be a proper podcast about technology and the Chinese legal system if we didn't use the word Orwellian. If we're thinking about, you know, where are we going to be 5 or 10 years down the line? And you know, you can have these dystopian ideas where we're going to have these smart cities, but essentially smart cities are completely covered with facial recognition cameras, automatically feeding data to police services, who then pipe it forward into court systems, you know, ostensibly without any human intervention, up to the point where we might get literally RoboCop arriving at someone's door, bringing them to jail, informing them on the way over there that they've just been, you know, observed by camera number 1250 doing this, and that therefore they've been convicted to 10 years in prison. All right. That's the dystopian nightmare. Is there anything plausible about this, or is reality a little bit more messy and complex than that?
Reality, of course, is more messy and complex than that. I think it's really interesting what a hold George Orwell has over all of our imaginations. That's an old, 1984 is an old book, but so tremendously important for framing how we think about these things. I think this paper that I wrote with Ben and with Molly and with Alice is trying to push back against that. And we're not the only ones, but trying to say that collecting information and the aspiration perhaps to be have that Orwellian vision is not the same as being able to actually do it. And we see a big gap between where we are now and some kind of Orwellian future. And in the court context, it's really clear to us that the way that procurement works is each individualized court system signs a contract with a tech partner to produce software. And so what that means is that we have a bricolage of software. Like literally the Shanghai courts are using something different than the Guangzhou courts. I think all of Sichuan's on one system, but Gansu's on another system. It's kind of a mess. So it's going to one day require significant effort to integrate if you were ever to have, for example, the capability of the SPC, the Supreme People's Court sitting in Beijing, to look at a national system. We're really, really far from that. And then I think that the question that we're asking is how good are states at analyzing information, not just collecting it? And data-driven governance is really hard. Like that's kind of the theme of our paper. And we're not the only ones talking about this. Huirong Chen and Sheeta Greitens have a really nice piece out in governance where they kind of make the same point, which is just to say that even if the aspiration is there to have a national system, it's not easy to do, that China is struggling with problems of information islands. That's how it's talked about in Chinese scholarship and in the Chinese press. And all kinds of incentives exist not to share information across the bureaucracies. So for example, we're just talking about the courts, right? You can imagine it might be useful for the courts to have information systems that are integrated with the police, integrated with the procuracy, with the prosecutors. And that is a real challenge. They're not there yet. So I think the vision in 5 to 10 years is to start to do some of this integration. But I think once you get a little bit beyond China's own PR and the kinds of breathless pieces that might appear in the Chinese press, it becomes really clear that doing this work is really hard and that the ambitions are maybe there for a national integrated system. But the reality is that China is still a long way from there.
Thank you so much, Professor Stern, for the wonderful conversation.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure was all ours. Thank you for listening to the China Smart State podcast. Feel free to hit the subscribe button and please leave a review, a glowing one, wherever you download your podcast. We hope you've liked this show and looking forward to having you again for the next one. Bye-bye.